tuned to the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. You'll also find us at 90.9 FM HD2 and online at will.illinois.edu. I'm Celeste Quinn. Jason Croft is our technical director today, the producer for the Afternoon Magazine, Harriet Williamson. Well, dog trainers Jim Keel and Robin Haggard are with us this afternoon. They're with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. The husband-wife team also have been breeders of Malamutes, and they've joined us from time to time. Jim, a more frequent guest than Robin, but it's always a pleasure to have Robin on the show with us. Carol Lindholm away this month, as we say. Listeners, if you've got questions about dogs, dog care, behavior, discipline, what have you, give us a call. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. That's 333-WILL. Toll-free 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Good to see you, the two of you. Welcome back.
Hi.
Hello. I haven't seen you since
it's been a
the
while.
New Year. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't here 1 month and you weren't here 1 month.
I took a
month.
Day off. Yeah.
So hello.
Hello.
How's the year been going?
Very well.
Oh, good.
And for the two of you?
Yeah. No puppies again.
Well, that's,
I think
know.
We're never
that's...
going to have yeah. puppies
we're,
again.
We're losing
ever
our status
again.
As breeders.
Yeah.
Is that by choice?
No, we bred a female and she decided not to get pregnant. So I thought she was and x-rayed her and there's nothing there. So disappointed.
Everybody's healthy, though, out at Poker Flats?
Yeah, our oldest is 15 in a couple months, and she's romping and stomping. So everybody seems to be fine.
That's 105.
Yeah, we've got a lot of old dogs right
dog
now.
Years.
So
we've got a listener already waiting to talk with us on line one. So we will go there.
Hello.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm good. I have a question, though, about my yellow lab, about 2 years old, almost 2 years old, and we recently acquired this dog, around Thanksgiving, and the dog is completely loyal to me, I mean, completely bonded to me, follows me everywhere, all that stuff, but what I'm calling about is the dog's lack of excitement for my 10-year-old son. My son is so disappointed because if the dog and I are walking down the sidewalk and my son approaches from the other direction, the dog doesn't even give him the time of day. I mean, he won't even wag a tail or look up. He just totally disregards him. And my son is he feeds the dog. Not every time, but he feeds him regularly. He takes him on walks. He's tried to train him, but the dog just doesn't give him the time of day. I wondered if you had any suggestions.
Well, I would have said have your son feed him, but you're already doing some of that. Jim years ago claimed that the dogs loved me more than they loved him because I fed them. So now he comes down and hands out the dishes so that they get to see that he's the giver of food. So he thinks that that's repaired his relationship.
Well, I discovered that theory was not correct. I would, since being kind and to the dog hasn't worked, I have a feeling that the your lab views his social position as that higher than your son's. And so your son is doing everything to confirm that. He's feeding him, which the lower echelon dogs would do. He's approaching him. He's initiating the contact and the dog's looking away. Your son could start doing that, start ignoring the dog. I think what might be good, you only have one dog.
Right.
That's very sad. But if you have a neighbor or a friend that has a dog, then you go outside, start walking with the dog, have your son come the other way with the neighbor's dog or the other dog, assuming it's a friendly dog. And before you get too close, have your son just go over this dog and say, "What a great dog you are." This is the other dog. Give it food. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. And then as you walk by each other, your son ignores your dog. and just keeps feeding this other dog.
Jealousy.
We're going for jealousy here.
Yeah.
But in the dog world, the dominant dog can initiate play, but they don't initiate affection. So your son, by coming up and trying to seek affection, the other dog turns away or ignores him. That's an act of dominance. All dominance isn't biting and, you know, tearing apart things. It's these little subtle things.
Right.
Where does your dog sleep?
Well, he still sleeps in a crate downstairs, so Good. He doesn't sleep in the bedroom.
Good. When do you feed him?
I feed him. Well, we feed him after we've had breakfast, so once in the morning and then once in the evening.
Okay. After you have dinner?
Well, not always. I mean, initially we did, but we've kind of gotten slack about that. So we can have dinner.
I don't think you have a problem with dominance here, you know. Mm-hmm. You just have interspecies communication problems. And it's hard to explain to a 10-year-old, look, this is how a dog behaves when they think, you know, such and such. It doesn't mean he's not affectionate toward your son. What it means is he feels he's dominant toward your son. And that's how dominant dogs act with respect to animals, puppies, you know, that they think are in a lower echelon position. He's not mean to him. He just says, you want to initiate play, I'm going to show my dominance by not cooperating.
Yeah, okay.
But you could try jealousy. I mean, jealousy makes the world go around, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah.
Very, very motivating. Okay, well, I'll try that. Can I ask one more question?
Sure.
No. Oh, okay.
Okay. I'm having trouble getting the dog to go outside. I mean, the dog will go outside gladly if I go with it, or I guess another family member. But the dog just thinks that he should be wherever I am, first of all. But he should be in the house if other family members are in the house. And I just wonder if you had any tips on getting him to enjoy the great outdoors. We have a fenced-in backyard. It just seems a shame that he doesn't take advantage of it more.
That's not uncommon. They want to be where the action is, and you and the family are where the action is. And being out in the yard by themselves is boring, you know.
Here's what you do. what do you feed him?
Dry dog food.
Good. Excellent. Take a big handful of dry dog food, show it to him, go out in the backyard with him, and he's going to be, oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. And you take that food and throw it, and it scatters all over, and he's going to spend a happy afternoon finding each little kibble. It helps with his hunting instincts, and it'll help keep him outside.
That's one thing.
Providing he doesn't start digging it up.
And if he's a food dog,
He is definitely a food dog.
Okay, most labs are, so that's a pretty safe bet. But if it were not food-oriented, then I wouldn't recommend it because the food would just lay there and mold. But if he's very food-oriented, then scattering the food and getting him to spend some time looking for it will help.
There are also toys, and I forgot what they're called, Kongs or something. You put food in them. Yeah. And the dog knocks it around.
A buster ball.
Occasionally, as they knock it around, the food comes out. And it kind of rewards them for playing with the toy. So I don't know what toys your dog has outside, but that's the kind of toy if they're food-oriented or scattering food here and there.
Well, I've tried giving him a chew toy that he only gets to keep outside.
Mm-hmm.
And every time he tries to bring it in, I throw it back outside. But so far, that hasn't been successful. But okay, I'll try.
Well, scattering the food, he's not going to be able to bring it in.
Also, if you have a neighbor that has a friendly dog that they like to play together.
A play date.
Yeah, have the neighbor bring the dog to your backyard and let the two of them.
We do that.
Yeah.
And again, the dog is just really thrilled with that, but if I go inside and the dogs are outside and maybe the neighbor's outside, the dog will eventually, my dog will eventually come stand on the steps and look inside like, where are you? Come on out.
Well, we have 5 acres fenced for our dogs. And when we let them out of their kennel runs to run in those 5 acres, they spend about 10 minutes running around sniffing and and marking. And then they come to the back door and knock on the door and say, "We're ready. We want in. We want where the action is." So to some extent, it's the fact that the dog is very social and wants to be wherever you are.
Which is a good thing.
Which is a good thing. And also, once it gets to the point where it's not as bored in the backyard, it might be stay out there at least a little longer than just long enough to do its business.
Okay.
You could put a home home entertainment center out in the backyard. Then you could stay outside and let the dog in.
Well, good luck.
I'll try that too. Okay. Thank you so much.
Well, let us know how it all turns out. Okay, next month. So next we're going to take a call from a listener in Urbana. Oh, they're gone away. Well, maybe they'll call back. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Toll-free 800-222-9455. This is the Afternoon Magazine. We talk about dogs once a month on the first Friday of the month. With us today, dog trainers Jim Keel and Robin Haggard. They're with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. Let me give the numbers again. We've got a call coming in, so we won't launch into another topic and make that individual wait. 333-WILL, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Toll-free 800-222-WILL. Next, we go to a listener on line one. Urbana, hi.
Hi.
What can we do for you? Hi.
Well, I'm following up on your last call. I've got a Vizsla, and I've heard them called the Velcro dogs, given that they want to be wherever you are. We've worked on that, and he'll bark like crazy to be with you. And he's out with two other of our dogs. He'll play together well with them, run with them. But the minute he's back in his kennel and we're just outside of it even doing something, he wants to bark and be where we're at. I've got an anti-barking collar that's got progressive settings, and it's a smart collar, but I feel like that gets potentially cruel over time. Any suggestions?
Well, there's a citronella collar that doesn't involve electricity. That when they bark, it releases mosquito spray, and it's an unpleasant odor for the dog, but it doesn't cause them any pain, and you can try that.
Is that from like a typical pet supply?
Yeah, any pet store should have that.
Depending on how much he likes to bark, that may or may not work. I've had friends try it with dogs that like to bark, and some dogs get used to it. So, there's a couple of different ways to approach it. If you can ignore him long enough, then when he's quiet, go reward him. That sometimes will work over time, but it's something that takes some time to get through his brain that when he's quiet, he gets attention. When he's noisy, he doesn't get any attention. I beg your pardon?
Would he need to be separated from the other two dogs to try and work on that for reward? Or you think that...
Well, it's probably what's causing him to bark is separation.
Well, he's
there with them. He's
with the other dogs when he's doing the barking. He's barking to get your attention.
He's with the other dogs in the same run?
They have three separate runs side by side.
Yeah. But when he stops barking, it doesn't matter whether the other dogs are there or not, because you can just go reward him when he stops barking.
Okay.
And since they're in separate runs, then it's not going to be an issue where the other dogs expect, at least after the initial time or two, they expect to be treated as well.
This is why you never have spouses on these shows.
But
I have my doubts. I have my doubts.
Well, it's something that takes a while to work on.
One of the problems is trying to get a dog to stop barking when you're not there, or to try to train a dog to do anything when you're not there is very difficult.
It's not when they're not there that he's barking.
Yes, dear.
It's when he's in the yard with just doing something and the dog's in the run.
Right.
So if you're there and he's still barking because he's not right there with you, then when he becomes quiet, you can go reward him.
Another thing, you
have to wait it out till he stops the barking.
Well, and what's going to happen is if you're there in the yard and the dog's barking, you're going to start to walk toward the his kennel, his run. And as soon as you do that, he's going to stop barking for about a second. Okay? And you keep walking. As soon as he starts barking again, stop walking. And he'll start barking. You know, he's barking, arf, 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 arf. You're not walking. He's sooner or later, he's going to stop even for a second. As soon as he stops barking, start walking toward his kennel again. And, of course, when he sees you moving, he's going to go arf, 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 arf.
Mm-hmm.
Sooner or later, and it may take, you know, later, but he's going to
–
I've taught dogs to quit jumping against the kennel run door in about 3 minutes. Just not saying anything, no food, no rewards, no voice, nothing. They know that I have to go and open the door for them to get out. Dogs aren't very smart, but they can figure that out. Your dog will figure out he's not going to get a reward unless you're – you know, by the run. And you're not going to be by the run unless you're walking toward him. And it's just those moments of silence when you start to walk that mark the behavior that you want. And he's going to start barking. He'll stop maybe to catch his breath, and you start walking. And that's going to teach him that that's the behavior you want. Now, whether that works when you're not there, you know, that's another story. But
I don't know that he really cares. I don't hear him really a lot when we're not out there by them. You can hear it if the car comes up or something like that, they'll bark. But no, they don't just sit out there and bark.
Well, we have
a
male who grew up. His mother turned out didn't have any milk, and the puppies were starving, and we caught him in time. But he's really he's not food oriented. He's just nuts for food, just crazy.
Manic.
And when we go, you know, at night when we go to feed him, he is screaming. I'm sure you can hear him in town. You know, he's, I have tried the technique of when I go to let him out of the run and I stop, he won't jump, but he still is going, and I've tried the technique of not walking. And it works, but up to a point. He's still sneaking these little in, you know, as I'm opening the door. But it cut back on his screaming frenzy quite a bit. Well, and that's when I'm there and he wants to be let out.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll give it a try. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, you could also try the Buster Ball.
Just
to keep his attention off of you.
Yeah, he does that for a little while when I was there, but boy, he's focused on us, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, well, thanks again.
Okay. Let's take another call. Next in line four, line four. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Good. And I picked up the back end of an earlier call. Hope I'm not being redundant. But we've got a Westie, a small West Highland Terrier. Great dog. Good to everybody. But she really has connected to me. I don't know if it's because I'm the only male in the house. I have a wife and two high school daughters. And she just really follows me around, and if I go and sit on the sofa, she'll come up and sit with me. And I kind of feel bad for my two daughters in high school who would like to do more things with her, but she often just leaves them and ignores them to follow me. Is it a dominance issue, or what can I do to have them help them and get more attention from the dog?
How does she interact with them? I mean, is she, when you're not available, is she very friendly with them and will play with them and cuddle with them and things like that?
Yeah, she's friendly with them. You know, she'll probably, if they're sitting up on the sofa, call up. She's very good to them. She's never battering.
Mm-hmm.
Once in a great while, she's sitting with me and they come to pick her up. She'll give a little growl, nothing beyond that or anything, but when I travel, she's good to them. It's just really, when I'm kind of home, when I come home, she...
When you're available, you're the focus.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. I'm not sure that it's necessarily dominance as far as she's concerned. It's always hard to gauge those things unless you can really see the dog's behavior. But I would suggest if they're not already doing it that they do a little obedience with her. Just... you know, putting her on a leash and having her sit and down and heel, do some little recalls, and always with some cookies, just so that they get some interaction where they're in control and she's not.
Okay, she'll walk with them next to her.
Yeah.
Let her control definitely Right. While they're walking, keep running.
Yeah, and do some, I call them sit-down stand exercises that I do in the puppy class, and that's just take a handful of cookies and make her do the three positions, sit with the hand over the head, down with the hands down, kind of sweeping to the floor with the cookie in it, and then stand, you just kind of pull your hand straight out in front of her. And just play those sorts of games with her where they're in control and getting her to do things, or even tricks, you know, shaking hands, sure. praying, you know, all the little tricks like that. If they do some tricks with her with cookies, interacting at that level, that might help to deepen the relationship between her and them.
Maybe just a little more playing.
Yeah, and okay. It's always that they're in control, though. They're asking her to do the behaviors and rewarding her only when she does them.
All right, that sounds good. I appreciate it.
Okay. Next, we talk with a listener in Champaign on line 3. Hello. Hi. Hello there.
Hey, what do you guys think of the gentle leader head collar? I just got one, and then when I hear what you think about it, I'll tell you what my dog's doing with it.
Well, neither one of us like the gentle leader. It may be because we have a pulling breed, but for some dogs, they seem to work well. Some owners like them. Jim calls them the...
I call them the canine neck wrenchers.
Yeah.
But Carol Lindholm.
Carol likes them.
Now, in fairness to Carol, she told me never to say that again. So... Robin didn't know that, and I, in fact, was never going to say it again, but it came up.
They're a tool. They're a training tool, and it's sort of like the pinch collar. They're things to help you maybe get over certain issues with the dog, but it's not something that you want to use all the time, every day, and have to use on your dog. You want to train away from something like that into a regular you know, buckle collar or a martingale type collar. At least from my perspective, I think when you lean on something like that too long, then you're not training the dog really to behave the way you want. You're kind of ameliorating the problem, but you're not solving it.
I see. Interesting.
What's your dog doing?
Okay, he's a 1-year-old high energy beagle. And when it's on him, we can have a walk without him dragging us, which is wonderful. He kind of trots along about, he'll trot along, I don't know, maybe 10 or 12 steps, and then he'll drop his head down and just scoot his head along the grass for about 3 steps and then pick up his head and trot happily for another dozen steps and then drop his head down and just, like he's trying to rub it off.
Mm-hmm.
But he keeps up the pace. It's really weird. But he's not dragging us around.
Mm-hmm.
So. And we're not yanking on it or anything. It's
yeah.
just he's very aware that it's there, and he doesn't really fight it to mm-hmm. try and get it off, except for this goofy-looking drop.
Where he rubs his nose on things. It might tickle him, too. You never know. It might be a matter of that it's just riding on his nose enough that it's kind of tickling and sort of... If you've ever noticed, like when the fly bites them or mosquitoes bite them, they'll rub their nose to kind of itch.
Ah.
So that might be part of the dropping the head and rubbing. But if it's working for you, that's great. But I would definitely think about, you know, working with him on his walks in terms of putting him on a regular collar sometimes during the walk and having mm-hmm. the gentle leader on him but not using it and mm-hmm. seeing if it's improved his behavior enough that it's transferring to the regular collar.
Yeah.
Or
then
if
he starts pulling, I could pick up the gentle leader.
And put it back. Or, yeah, just have the gentle leader on it but not use it until
right.
you need it.
Right, I understand.
Robin doesn't let me talk to puppy people for the following reason. I was teaching her class because she couldn't be there, and she teaches the puppy class. And at the end, a woman came up to me, and she had a little Kieshund, I think. Maybe 8 months old. And she's a nice dog, and she's a good trainer. But she said, can you tell me how to keep my dog from pulling me all over the place? And I said, ma'am, it's physically impossible for this dog to pull you anywhere. The only reason it can is you're letting it.
Yeah.
If you just stand there, And this is with an ordinary collar. The dog will go to the end of the collar. It'll pull. It'll start to choke. And he'll stop doing it because he doesn't want to choke to death. But if you give him some slack, he'll just keep pulling you and pulling you.
Our dog doesn't seem to mind choking himself, really.
Well, my point is I can't imagine – there's no beagle on the planet that could pull me around, you know. And I'm not a particular – if you saw, I'm not a particularly big guy and I'm not particularly strong. But I'm not afraid to let the dog pull, you know, until he realizes that he's not going to get anywhere and stops pulling. And the thing about the gentle leader or a pinch or the harness that pinches him, these are gimmicks. Mm-hmm. And you're not training the dog to do anything. Mm-hmm. You're preventing them from doing it, mm-hmm. which is fine because if the dog is unruly on a regular collar, you're not going to be able to teach them anything until they calm down.
Right.
So getting control, I don't want to underestimate. And I've got nothing against the gentle leader except that most people can put a gentle leader on any dog and the dog isn't going to fight them.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as a dog is on any other kind of collar or gets loose, they're gone.
Yeah. Okay, so we should just look at it as a tool to get him used to doing the right thing, and then the goal being
exactly
to get rid of it.
Exactly. And occasionally, while you're walking, too, call him back to you and give him a treat.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Just so that he gets to the point where he says, oh, whenever I come back to you, it's not that we're ending the walk. It's not that things are going to stop, but I'm going to get a treat, and it's a good thing, and then I can go out and do my sniffing, and beagles are sniffers.
Oh, yeah.
And no matter what kind of collar you're using, gentle leader, regular, or anything, your goal is to get rid of it, you know, so the dog will stay by you for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And you know, it's not going to happen in one session. It's going to take time, as Robin says, you know, just keep treating. And when the dog gets the idea that sticking around you is a good thing, then you can start using fewer and fewer collars till you aren't using one at all.
Wow. Well,
cool.
Oh, we live
we have a leash law here.
I know. But you won't need it.
No, and if he's not food-oriented, you can always try toys, to take a squeak toy or, you know, a couple of their favorite toys and give them their toys occasionally on the walk so they can carry them and stuff
like that.
So just to kind of keep them focused on you and not just on the environment.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Great. Thank you very much.
Sure. You're welcome. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Dog trainers Robin Haggard and Jim Keel are our guests this afternoon. Next, we go to a listener on line two, Coles County. Hi.
Hi. We have some questions down here in the county for the guests concerning the value accuracy of spending $60 to have our mixed breed dogs DNA tested. And I wondered, I know they're, of course, purebred dog breeders. Some of us have coughed up and done this. Is this entertainment value? Is there any medical and behavioral value to this? We were curious about their opinion.
We've had friends who've done this, a couple of different types of mixes, and they've gotten very interesting results, not results that were necessarily expected. I'm trying to think of what oddities. A friend of ours did their dog that looks like you would say a border collie, maybe a chow cross or Keeshan cross, and it came up with something like
Very exotic.
Like a Chinese crested or something.
It was,
you know, the combination was something very strange, nothing you would even remotely consider would happen. So another friend of ours did this with their dog, and he looks like a husky shepherd mix, or she looks like that. And it came back with that it was primarily a collie shepherd mix. And the guy wanted more, you know, let's give it a little more. So they went back and they retested, and it came up with about four different breeds that they thought it could go back to. So it's not real definitive, but it is kind of a fun thing, interesting thing to do. And if your dog is behaving in certain ways, it might help explain some of the behavior. If it doesn't look like it comes from a herding background, but it seems to have a strong herding instinct, it might tell you that really there is some herders back there, and so kids on bicycles are going to be particularly interesting for it. So, but its value in terms of, other than a curiosity or to solve the mystery of the parentage, is not real high.
I think one of our friends got this as a Christmas present, wasn't it?
I can't remember.
Yeah, it was like,
or the wife gave it to the husband as a birthday present or something.
Some sort of present, just so he would know what was in the background.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's more entertainment than science.
Uh-huh. Yeah. AKC has made a database of all the purebred breeds. They collected DNA from several hundred individuals of each breed, and so they have a database to tell them, you know, what that breed's gene distribution, so to speak, is, or at least a good sample of it. So that I think that's probably what these organizations
They're dealing
use.
With very limited alleles. And the most I think you can say from these DNA tests is that they're dogs.
Yeah, exactly.
We've done DNA. We had a dual sire litter. The AKC allows you to breed to two different males, and then you DNA test the puppies to see who the daddy is. And it was very interesting because you could tell, you know, you look at the DNA of the dad and you look at the DNA of the puppies, and it was pretty obvious.
It wasn't our litter, somebody else's, friend's litter.
Yeah, it was pretty obvious that who the daddy was.
Well, that's interesting. So, now, a purebred owner who just left our lunch group here purchased a Shih Tzu from, I would call it, a so-called local breeder. At 1 year old, to this untrained eye, the Shih Tzu is what is known as a Maltese.
They all look the same, don't they?
Yeah, they all do. Yeah. And she wondered if, in her instance, not that she's going to pursue anything with the breeder, it would, in fact, be reasonable for her to invest in the DNA testing, given that the dog has virtually identical.
If the dog has AKC papers, in fact, she can pursue it with AKC. It costs $40 to get your dog's DNA. They have a program, AKC does, if you have a purebred dog that you're using for breeding, if you use it at stud more than seven times in a year, you're required to have its DNA on file. And AKC has instituted a program of checking, especially the large, you might say, commercial breeders. They check DNA on the dogs and to make sure that they are who they say they are. And every month in our AKC Gazette, they report hundreds of dogs whose registration has been revoked because the DNA did not support who the parentage was. So AKC's making large strides in that direction. And as you say, your friend may not want to take any action, but it might be interesting.
That is interesting. And the last thing along these lines, people keep saying, if you know the breed of your dog and you find that your dog is a difficult breed, for instance, mine came out mostly Dalmatian, you're going to have to train that dog differently based upon the breed. And I'm going to bet my limited IRA that you're going to say dog training is dog training. It takes more consistency perhaps with some breeds. Some are more adaptable to it. But the notion that because you find you've got some pit bull in your dog, there's a different type of training. I'd like your opinion on that.
We puppy test all of our puppies. Okay, we have Alaskan Malamutes. We bred the same. We've been breeding for 40 years. We've got 10, 15 generations involved in our dogs that we've known those dogs. Mm-hmm. We still puppy test the litters and place them accordingly. There's, even though they're the same breed and they're not real inbred, but they're line bred, you'd think that they would consistently be the same, but they're not. They're different, so you have to place them accordingly. So as you say, even though yours may predominantly have Dalmatian, it may not act any more like a
not at all
Dalmatian than the man in the moon. So you take each dog individually. When you bring it home, you have to start looking at what kind of dog you have, what kind of corrections it's going to need, how hard-headed is it,
its temperament.
How willing, exactly.
Yeah. There are more differences between individual dogs than there are in breeds. Yeah. So if you have, for example, we have almost no Malamutes that will retrieve naturally. Mm-hmm. And almost any retriever will annoy you till the end of time at retrieving. When you, but if you were going to teach both of them to retrieve, you would teach it the same way. The retriever would catch on faster than the Malamute, but there would be very little difference in the technique.
But like all statistics, there's always exceptions to
breed. Exactly. And you have to look at your individual dog and see what kind of material you're working with and then train accordingly. And that's as trainers, we try to have as wide a toolbox, if you will, as possible so that we can meet any condition, because even though we have the same breed, we have a brother and sister that are completely different, completely different. The male is so soft, if you say no to him in a little voice, he melts, and the female, you could hit her against the head with a wiffle ball bat, and she'd kind of look at you like, you want to be, you know. So they're just as different as night and day.
Okay. Well, thanks very much, Jim and Robin. This is Sue in Mattoon, and I hope you guys are doing well.
I thought I recognized your voice.
Thanks so much.
Let's take another call. A listener in Charleston, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
I have some practical advice I'm looking for. I adopted two female boxers. They were rescue dogs last summer. They're about four. One of them had a front leg that's been amputated. And my house has a combination of throw rugs and wood floor. But this dog weighs about 70 pounds, and she hops. So every time, you know, she goes across the wood floor, we can keep her nails trimmed, but when she goes across, especially if, you know, she decides to try to run, it scratches the floor. We don't really have it so much with the other dog, who doesn't have so much weight, you know, impacting every step. I've tried a non-skid sock, and that, of course, she just pulled off. And I tried to, I bought some of those soft nails that you can get online and tried gluing some of those on, and that wasn't a very popular thing to do. I think something with a rubber tip would be great. But any other suggestions for some way to keep her from scratching the wood floors once she gets off of the rug?
When you trim her nails, do you use a nail clipper or do you use a Dremel?
The soft paws Dremel.
Okay. I was going to say, a lot of times with the regular nail clippers, the edges are still sharp and take a few days to wear a little bit to the point where they're smooth. If you're using the Dremel, just really take the nail down as much as you can and give it a nice curve so that there's no sharp edges.
Mm-hmm.
And that might help. But...
you're not going to be able to stop her from hopping.
Yeah.
Unless you remove her nails, she'll always have nails, however blunt they may be.
But if you keep them, if you really work them back with the Dremel, and that means Dremeling them maybe every couple of days even at first to get them really worked back, because you're just taking a very fine piece off each time. That may get them worked back to the point where even if she digs in, she's not going to have much. The only problem with that is having three legs, she may need those nails to dig in to get her balance. And we, with our weight-pulling dogs, when we're doing actual sledding and weight-pulling with them in the winter, we let their nails get a little longer because they need that to be able to dig into the snow, almost like...
golf shoes or something.
Golf shoes, yeah, exactly. So she may need that.
You might try the non-skid booty.
Yeah, I have.
I know, but she took it off. But don't introduce it a lot slower. You know, put it on her and then take it off a minute later. Showering. Yeah. Well, Robin made a face there. She doesn't like that idea.
Well, no, I think the booty is one of those things. It takes her a while to get used to it. Mm-hmm. And
even sled dogs
takes a while. Yeah, just keep putting it on her. Just keep replacing it. That might eventually, you know, a few days of that, she may give up trying to get it off.
Right. Well, she does like to dig in the yard with it. I mean, she can run.
Yeah.
and she can hop, but she just doesn't walk. And, you know, you have all that impact that goes in. So every time she lands on that, if she hits the wood, it scoots. And
yeah. A friend of ours got those indoor-outdoor big pieces of carpet that don't skid in the house, and they made like a little alleyway between rooms on their hardwood floors for their Malamutes, and that really helped a lot.
Yeah. We pretty much have that now, you know.
Yeah.
But any place she hits in between, it always scratches. Yeah. And I thought, well, maybe there's something new out there I don't know about
I would just work really with the Dremel, but keeping in mind that she does need some nail length, maybe for her particular situation for balance.
So I should just try it and just use it a little more often. Okay. Well, I appreciate the suggestion.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Next we go to a listener who's joining us this afternoon from New Hampshire on line three, listening on the internet. Line three, good afternoon.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling because I adopted at the beginning of the week, actually, a 3-year-old rescue dog. He's a red-bone coonhound lab mix. And he was only just recently neutered and house-trained over the last month in his foster home. And because the house training isn't very well established in our home, we're crating him when we're not around to supervise him. The first few days, he seemed to already know the command, go to your bed, and he went into the crate on his own. But the last couple of days, he's been refusing to go in and have to be sort of lifted in. And when you put his first couple paws in, he'll then go in and settle down. But I feel like we're sort of caught between the conflicting goals of making the crate a positive experience and also keeping that go-to-your-bed command effective. And on the other hand, the consistent health training. And I was wondering if you had any suggestions.
How old is he?
He's 3 years old.
And you've had him for a month?
No, we just had him for a week, actually.
Okay.
And he spent the last 6 weeks in a foster home, and he was only neutered and house trained during that period, so as an adult dog.
My idea of crate training is from the day the puppy's born till the day they die is when you want them to go in the crate, you throw a cookie in the crate, and they follow it in. And I just always do that. And I have a feeling it's a lot. And the reason is they go pretty soon. They just run into the crate. I still give them a cookie, but it's a whole lot easier than fighting with them about it.
Okay.
And we have 20 Bella dogs, so it's just easier to say here. Okay, in the crate. And I try that with him. Just take a cookie, show it to him, say, and throw it in the crate. And I'll bet he goes into the crate. And you can say whatever you want, but it's the cookie that's getting him in.
Well, and my guess is now he's comfortable with you.
Yeah.
So now he's testing you to see if he really has to do what you're asking him to do, because he's feeling at home now. And so this is probably just the tip of the iceberg of things he might start to say. Oh, I don't remember how to walk nicely on a leash. I don't remember that, these things. And so you may have to go back and reinforce some things that he came with, because when he came to your house, he didn't know what to expect. So he was, on his good behavior, you might say. And now that he's getting used to you guys and knowing what you want him to do.
Dogs pretty quickly figure out
how
to get around people. And when you're new to them, they don't know what your behaviors are, so they're kind of good. But
feeding him in the crate is a good thing. Just with the door open, just put their food in there and feed him in the crate. Always have a toy or something nice in the crate that he likes to play with or chew on. Those are good things. And don't let him get away with it.
Yeah, don't feel bad about a little bit of force to get him in the crate.
If he refuses, if he says no way, make him go in. And then treat him. Make sure that it's pleasant while he's in there, and then maybe let him right back out again and just say, hey, when I say you go in the crate, you go in the crate. That's all there is to it.
Okay, so do that exercise a few times in and out.
Yeah, and also feeding him in the crate, I find they associate many good things with being fed in the crate. Even with the door open, you just let them go in and put their food dish down in the crate.
You almost can't keep them out.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
All right. I have a second question, if you have time. And that is, do you have any suggestions for how to get him to do his business in our yard? He seems to only want to pee when we're out on walks, and maybe that's normal, but we've tried a post and some spray and putting some newspaper with his own urine on our backyard, but he doesn't seem, he sniffs it and then he walks away.
If you have time, pretend like you're going for a walk. Just stand there, and when he does his business, then you start your walk. So his reward for doing his business in the backyard is he gets to go on a walk. And since he's already done his business, he's not going to do it while you're walking.
Okay.
Well, he's going to mark some in the neighborhood. He's a male dog, so he's going to mark some in the neighborhood. But particularly his poops. If you want him to do that in your yard as opposed to your neighbor's yard, then the waiting thing will work.
You may have to wait a half hour until the dog does it, but that's why I said you have to have time.
I hope that helps. We're out of time. Before we go, though, I want to mention that tomorrow the Champaign County Humane Society Muttstrut is at Hessel Park. Registration check-in 8 o'clock to 8:45 a.m. The walk 9 a.m. Hessel Park in Champaign. Muttstrut is a dog walk and fundraiser for the Champaign County Humane Society. So
there's also some dog shows over Memorial Day weekend over in Bloomington at the Interstate Center. So if you want to go see a dog show, obedience and confirmation and rally obedience, plus they have an eye clinic and a heart clinic. That's all taking place over in Bloomington over Memorial Day weekend.
Okay, Bloomington, Indiana.
Bloomington, Illinois.
Bloomington, Illinois.
Very close.
Okay.
And Google Roy Jones dog shows, or no, Jack Onofrio dog shows, all one word, and that will get you to the place.
Okay, very good. Well, Robin, Jim, thanks so much.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Jim Keel and Robin Haggard, they are with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. Dogs, a topic we take up once a month on the first Friday of the month. So we'll be back in June.